We'll kick off another year of Hamvention Forum excerpts for the May 27, 2011 Rain Report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Brian, KG4WIJ, with the first Rain Report since the completion of the 2011 Dayton Hamvention. In our first excerpt, we'll bring you our first segment from the FCC Forum, a standing room only event each year at Dayton. Here's Bill Cross to introduce our first segment from that forum.
My name is William Cross. I work in the Mobility Division of the FCC. That's in the Commission's Wireless Telecommunications Bureau. The Wireless Telecommunications Bureau is the office that is responsible in the FCC for oversight of the amateur service. On the air, I'm W3TN. With me again this year is Kurt Bartholomew, N3GQ. Kurt's from the Public Safety and Homeland Security Bureau. Bart will be talking about some of the things going on in the Public Safety and Homeland Security Bureau and some of the activities that it handles. Unfortunately, the Enforcement Bureau's Special Counsel for Amateur Radio, Laura Smith, was not able to make it this year. Before we get going, I want to offer a special thanks to Hamvention and the Dayton Amateur Radio Association for making this hour available for Bart and me to conduct the forum here. This year, we're letting Bart take the lead on the forum. As you've been reading, between the floods along the Mississippi, the tornadoes in the southeast, and other events that Mother Nature has sent our way, emergencies and disasters seem to have become everyday events. Being with the Public Safety and Homeland Security Bureau, Bart is with the part of the commission that gets involved with these events. He is the guy that keeps you on that bureau's radar screen. Bart has worked for a number of different agencies, so he comes with a perspective and a wealth of information that has helped us out considerably. He's going to talk to you about the activities of that bureau and emergency communications and kind of how ham radio fits in.
First thing is about the national level exercise, which we do every other year, but this one is about devolution. And here's a scenario. The scenario basically says that the FCC headquarters and all the other headquarters in Washington, D.C. no longer exist, and neither do the people inside of them. We say they're not available anymore. So what do? You try to devolve your headquarters somewhere else. You could have cell towers down, central office switching systems could be down, public switch telephone network, internet connectivity, cable networks, TV and radio stations, and even some satellite connectivity could be down under this scenario. We could be back to the one-horsepower vehicles. Or better yet, this may be available. This is the Flintstone model, and you might notice it comes with a Heathkit rig. We had to look at all these scenarios you see on this slide: cyber attack, geomagnetic storm, nuclear detonation, nuclear disaster, chemical attack, and biological attack. That's a lot in one slide, but we have to go through each one of these and say, what would we do if this happened? What would be available if that happened? Much more of a guessing game than you might think. As you know, you have all the short-distance communications devices. So wireless-wise, you might have some SATCOM, you might have some TV radio, family radio service, general mobile radio service, CB, multi-use radio service, HF, automatic link establishment, or amateur radio, which is what we're talking about. Wired-wise, you might have some public switch telephone networks still available if they have some backup power, and some fiber optics and cable and emergency power. Probably not available is cellular landline, internet, cable, TV, and radio satellite, or if it is, very spotty in this scenario. So what's the connection between this scenario and this exercise on amateur radio? Well, in this environment, federal agencies may need to ask for some help in emergency communications from state and local governments and even volunteers, and that's where we all come in. We have to ask you this question: have you established a working relationship with your served agencies? Something for you to think about. We put together a survey, but we couldn't bring it out because we have to go through the Paperwork Reduction Act, which is quite a process, as you might know. But what we need is some information from you all. We don't have a whole lot of information. It's mostly anecdotal, what we happen to know ourselves. And as Bill Cross will tell you, he gets a lot of calls asking for information. We don't know. It's not in our database. We don't have it. So we're looking at doing some kind of survey to ask you information about yourselves and how we can try and use that for the future. And these are some of the questions that are in the survey, which I can't show you. Based on a speech that the FEMA administrator gave us a couple weeks ago, our bureau asked to start a committee of some sort for amateur radio MCOM, but he wasn't really sure how we should do it. We're not really sure either, so we're talking about it. Just want to let you know that we're working on something like that. Bill and I are going to get together with some others, and we're going to try and see if we can do something in this vein. So it's very tentative at this time. Just want to let you know we're doing something. I just learned about 2 weeks ago that the Office of Emergency Communications at DHS headquarters has put together a new course, and it's called Auxiliary Emergency Communications Workshop. is designed for amateur radio operators who support the local effort in the local government. And let me quote here what I was told in an email. This course is not to replace a state's existing training program, but is mainly to supplement its training with a standardization that will soon be available with all states. This course is 2.5 days long, and the curriculum mainly deals with amateurs working closely with COMELs, unit communications leaders, and the emergency operations centers. That's in the works. It's actually being advertised right now. This is something that we would ask you to think about. You might think twice about ignoring local talent that does not fit into, quote, the plan, unquote. The plan has to be flexible so we can fit the available resources and skill sets into the plan. For example, in the U.S. Army Reserves, the unit is brought to the location where the people are, not the people to the unit. You can train them to increase their skill sets, but you can't move them to another country or state. So in MCOM, you may see someone available who only works CW, but he does it 25 words a minute. How do you fit him into your plan? You may not have anybody who is ready to use digital emission types and modes such as WinLink 2000, Multi-PSK, Mixed-W, Packet Radio, or MBEMS. However, you may have a ham who knows his way around DigiPan, has a nice satellite setup, has a good single sideband VHF capability, and similarly outfitted buddy in the next county. Or he may be able to send and receive CW at 20 words a minute or more and regularly checks into a net.
You're listening to a 2011 FCC Forum Talk by Kurt Bartholomew, N3GQ, from the FCC's Public Safety and Homeland Security Bureau. We'll conclude his presentation in a moment. This is the RAIN Report, available for transmission over amateur radio repeaters and simplex VHF-UHF stations under a Community Common License. See therainreport.com for details.
What we're saying here, let's not ignore the local talent that does not fit into the plan. And here's a question for everyone. Will the volunteer MCOM operators of tomorrow be prepared enough to pair the connectivity and level of service sufficient to be of value to local governments, volunteer organizations active in disasters, and citizens during significant events? This is a topic that we need to routinely and thoroughly discuss among ourselves and with our served agencies. We need to place the word major in front of any type of emergency and ask ourselves how prepared we are to respond to any of them. A major earthquake, a major tornado, hurricane, disaster, criminal act, or even a terrorist attack. How often has a major weather event or a major event hit your area? Every 5 years? Every 12 years? Small emergencies help us prepare for larger ones. However, the ubiquitous and generally resilient nature of modern wireless communications networks increasingly affords us fewer opportunities to train because the smaller emergencies are repaired rather quickly, perhaps within hours, and in many cases, circuits are routed through the problem area. So although there is a ubiquitous deployment of wireless communications devices, amateur radio operators are still needed to assist with emergency, disaster, and catastrophic communications. So BlackBerries and cell phones generally are normally the first wireless systems to become initially unusable in most significant emergencies. And as you know, CB, FRS, MURS, DMRS, we mentioned earlier, these radios are easily available. However, they have extremely short range, and there is very little organization or infrastructure to use them in a versatile and dependable communications system. So we must acknowledge, however, that the increased cell phone infrastructure and its generally good resilience has lessened the need for amateur radio operators, who were the only folks who get a phone line where mobile away from a landline phone. You might remember our old repeater auto patch system, which many systems still have today, was a lifesaver in the old days, and still is in parts of every community without ubiquitous cell phone coverage. In my own county, we had a car accident just a couple of years ago in an area where there was no cell phone coverage. One ham relayed the information to a 911 call center through our auto patch system, and he talked to an EMT who helped save a guy's life on the scene in the auto accident. So we still are useful with the auto patch system. That's very important. Okay, we had this forum a couple weeks ago, and you might find this very interesting. During the forum, FEMA Administrator Craig Fugate praised amateur radio operators for their provision of emergency communications in the aftermath of earthquakes, tsunamis, and hurricanes. This is the first known recent praise of amateur radio operators from this level at FEMA. And here's a quote that I actually transcribed from the video record, and I'll just read the quote. I'll try to sound like him a little bit. I want to hit four broad areas, because we talk about communications, and we talk about the public. Oftentimes, I almost get a sense that we pit one against the other in how we describe things. I think we talk a lot about social media at the expense of the broadcasters. I think we talk a lot about public safety communications, but then we come back to the broadband. And then there's one group that we never talk about, but they're the ultimate backups. And they were the originators of what we call social media, and that's the amateur radio operators. 10 minutes later, during the same forum, Administrator Fugate said, and I'll quote again, And then finally, I have to come back to amateur radio. The initial communications out of Haiti and some of the communications as we go back and forth about these disasters is from volunteers using assigned frequencies, they were allocated, their own equipment, their own money, nobody pays them. They were the first ones oftentimes getting word out in the critical first hours and first days as the rest of the systems came back up. And I think there's a tendency that because we have done so much to build infrastructure and resiliency in all our other systems, we have tended to dismiss that role. When everything else fails, amateur radio is oftentimes our last line of defense. And I think at times we get so sophisticated and we have gotten so used to the reliability and resilience of our wireless and wire systems and our broadcast industry and all of our public safety communications that we can never fathom that they'll fail. They do, they have, they will. And I think a strong amateur radio community that's plugged into these plans is needed. Yeah, most of the time they're going to be bored, because there's not a lot they're going to be doing that people aren't doing with Twitter and Facebook and everything else. But when you need amateur radio, you really need them.
That concludes our first excerpt from the 2011 Dayton Hamvention and its FCC Forum. We featured Kurt Bartholomew, N3GQ, from the Commission's Public Safety and Homeland Security Bureau. Speaking of the Dayton Hamvention, it took place this past weekend, May 20 through 22, in the Dayton suburb of Trotwood, Ohio. RAIN's founder and producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, passed along these observations. I always say everyone should have a little rain in their lives each week. For the first time in some time, we had no rain at the Hamvention during Hamvention hours. In fact, it was sunny, with temps in the high 70s, low 80s all weekend. The air conditioning functioned better in the arena than I remember. Stephanie, KA9WKD, my wife and best bud the past 35 years, and I knew we were in trouble when we encountered some plumbing issues in the arena while setting up the booth the day prior to the Hamvention opening. Saturday afternoon, a cataclysmic sewer line collapse in the flea market created some tense moments for a couple of hours until the problem was resolved. As always, ITA audio and video were most helpful in assisting RAIN interface our recording gear with the PA system in each of the four forum rooms. Special thanks to Vern Jackson, WA0RCR of the 160-meter Gateway Radio Newsletter, his wife Dottie, KG0VN, and my wife Stephanie, KA9WKD, for their invaluable help throughout the weekend. And mega thanks to Dara and the Dayton Hamvention for their support and most appreciated donation. On a final note, Hap passed along this observation. I cannot recommend the in-town suites in Miamisburg, as they gave our room away because we did not arrive by 4 p.m. Wednesday. 4 o'clock? Who are they kidding? No one told us about that when Vern and I made reservations back in February. Heck, the joint won't even hold a room for late check-in with a credit card. Fortunately, the Jacksons arrived before the motel office closed and did secure a room that was large enough for the four of us. Oh, the front desk is only manned from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. The fire alarm went off around 1:15 Sunday morning, rousting the four of us from our slumber. In chatting with some frequent occupants of the three-story motel, the Jacksons learned such false alarms aren't all that unusual. That helped to explain why the firemen weren't overly concerned by the event. A really fine Hamvention nonetheless for the RAIN crew. The RAIN Report is copyright 1990 through 2011, RAIN, all rights reserved. Now for Hap, Stephanie, Vern, and Dottie, I'm Brian, KG4WIJ, bidding you 7-3 from everyone connected with RAIN, the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.